The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. And welcome from the set of the CBS Sports HQ set here in New Orleans. I am Matt Norlander. This is the Eye on College Basketball podcast. Kyle Boone, look at this beautiful man. He is joining me. Where's Gary Parrish? Well, we'll talk about that in a little bit. The Eye on College Basketball podcast is presented by Jersey Mike's, proud sponsor of the Naismith Award. Jersey Mike's would like to offer their congratulations to all the athletes on the watch list. There will be the Jersey Mike's Naismith Award announcement coming quite soon. Hello from the set. We are doing a different kind of podcast here for this Friday. If you're listening, thank you as always listening. If you are watching on YouTube, please gently tap the like button or hit it, massage it, smash it, whatever you'd like to do. Please feel free to do so. No GP, but KB is here because, listen, CBS Sports Network, he's got a lot to do. We couldn't get him down here. I wanted my man on set. I wanted the three-way right here on the HQ set. But, GP, we got the open practices. I got to run over. Kyle's got to run over, go to the stadium in a little bit, see all the press conferences, all that good stuff there. But we have no shortage of stuff to talk about. If you want to leave a comment, a question in the chat, I do have it up here on my computer. We got people wondering if Parrish has been arrested. I can tell you that he has not, although, and we'll talk LaValle Jordan in just a second here. We socialized a bit last night. You got out on the town?
Yeah.
Okay. Did we see Gary Parrish?
No Gary Parrish to be seen.
No Gary Parrish.
Nowhere.
I have not seen him yet since I've gotten to New Orleans. He's here. No. That's the rumor.
So we're here. Yes. But we do have at least one. We have the requisite bald person on set, so I'm happy to represent.
That's fair.
For the short kings and the bald kings.
Yeah.
Here in New Orleans. We had a great night last night. Went to a little place called Peche.
Yeah. Peche? Good times. Big time.
Some
dinner.
Really good seafood. Some hush puppies. Man, it was some good eats.
And Sam Vecenie ate with us.
He did. Yes.
He's actually underneath this desk right now. Not yet. All right, let's talk breaking news. If you're watching live on YouTube, it's breaking specifically. We're going to get into the Final Four. We're going to pick our games. We're actually going to talk about our All-American teams, our season-ending awards at CBSSports.com as well. But shortly before we were scheduled to go on the air a few minutes ago, Butler fired LaValle Jordan. So he is out. Why today? Well, because today is the day that LaValle Jordan's buyout dropped significantly. And so it's kind of a rough deal overall because that staff, and I'd actually been talking with members of that staff in recent days and recent weeks, they had just been waiting and waiting, and they weren't sure whether or not LaValle was going to be safe. You know, they basically were hoping to get through Final Four weekend, maybe to by Monday, and if that were to happen, he'd be safe. Not the case whatsoever. Little bit of a rough look for Barry Collier. Some Butler fans, I understand, you're going to be happy about this because, you know, the program in recent seasons, I get all that. But LaValle Jordan was 87-73 past two seasons, 10-15 COVID year, and this past season, 14-18. But he did have that team clearly on pace to make the tournament in 2020, had it not been canceled, and had him to the tournament in his first year there. Your initial reactions off of LaValle being out at Butler, how surprising, and, you know, what do we think is next here?
Not totally surprising. Two consecutive losing seasons, 5 years where he went 83-74, following in Chris Holtman's footsteps, a very underrated coach, I might add.
Yes.
Chris Holtman, who was 70-31 before he got plucked by the Buckeyes. So some high standards at Butler, and I think, you know, there were some circumstances where maybe LaValle Jordan didn't get enough opportunity, but it's a very proud program. They should be consistently having winning seasons and consecutive losing seasons. I think you know, this was kind of expected.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's more expected than not, but there still was a curiosity. And weirdly enough, I mean, on Thursday, we had all these press conferences with the teams, but Mark Emmert spoke, Dan Gavitt was there. And so most of the members of the selection committee were actually in the room at the Caesar Superdome. Butler Athletic Director Barry Collier was there. I was actually talking with Jeff Goodman, and I was like, should we go up and ask him if he's going to fire Laval Jordan tomorrow? Now, we didn't do that, but I was seriously considering doing it because, again, the buzz behind the scenes had been growing for this. So he's out. By my count, this is now the 50th job across men's D1 that has opened, with Butler coming open here. And I've got a few names, including the name that I think is actually going to get the job, but some names to consider. I'll give you five of them. Yeah. I gave you three on HQ, and I've got two more that I toss out. Long shot, but maybe someone that might get a look is John Gross. I wonder if Ronald Norred will get an interview. Former Butler player, has, you know, coached in the G League and been involved in that side of it, and has interviewed in men's Division I for jobs there in recent years. Ronald Norred might be your deep sleeper there. Three other candidates to consider: Drew Valentine at Loyola Chicago. Now, he just finished his first year. He got him to the tournament. He's a coaching star on the rise. Don't know if this will happen immediately, but I do think that he'd be one under consideration. Maybe Mark Schmidt at St. Bonaventure. Mm-hmm. Another name. Those are four. But the name that I actually think is going to get it, and I've seen the chat right now. God bless the chat. Brad Stevens to Butler. Brad Stevens is not going to be one of my five names.
I was going to throw it in. I really was.
Brad Stevens is not one of the five names. Although, you want to talk about an all-time stunner. Stunner. Not Brad Stevens. Jeff Bowles at Ohio.
Yeah.
I talked to a few sources. Here's what I actually think is going to happen. Thad Mata, I think, might transition into the athletic department, because there's been some buzz about Thad Mata. Would he be the guy to get the Butler job? I actually think there's a good chance that he transitions to work for Butler, but not as the head coach. And then Bowles, who's a former assistant under Thad Mata, Jeff Bowles is your next head coach at Butler. That's my guess as of today. To me, and in talking to sources, he would be the leading candidate to get the Butler job. We'll see what plays out over the next day or two, four, five, 6 days. It's certainly going to be pretty interesting. Before we get to All-American teams, any other thoughts on Jeff Bowles? Any other candidates on the Butler job as the news breaks here on
Friday
morning? Yeah,
the chat already took my Brad Stevens drop. I guess he's probably comfortable what he's doing with the Celtics. I can't imagine he'd leave. In all seriousness, there's no chance. But, gosh, I love the Brad Stevens chatter. Just never ends.
Exactly.
Fantastic.
Listen, the chat is not exactly eager on the Laval stuff. It's breaking news, and I'm giving you intel. What else do you want from me? We will talk Final Four, and we will talk matchups. But I also want to talk about our All-American teams, our Player of the Year, because this is a Friday show. And you know what that means. Are your go-to game day foods feeling uninspired? Next time, skip the usual suspects and order Jersey Mike's. At Jersey Mike's, they make every sub to order with premium fresh sliced meat, and cheesesteaks are cooked on a flat top grill. Download their app for delivery, curbside, or in-store pickup. Jersey Mike's is a proud sponsor of the Naismith Award and a proud maker of a sub above. We'll have the Naismith Award announced here in short order, not on the pod, just generally speaking there. And I think there's a decent chance, a better than decent chance, KB, that the winner is the player that we picked to win National Player of the Year. So if you're listening to the pod and you're unaware of it, these went public. They went live on the site on Thursday. You want to tell the people our National Player of the Year, our National Coach of the Year,
yes,
and our National Freshman of the Year, Kyle Boone.
So our National Player of the Year for this year, Kentucky's Oscar Tshiebwe. No surprise. I think we were all in agreement.
It was my vote. Was it your vote?
That was my vote. He was number one. Our Coach of the Year, Kelvin Sampson, Houston, my vote.
Not my vote, but I'm not opposed to it. I voted for Ed Cooley.
Okay.
Yeah. Ed Cooley was actually my vote, and Kelvin Sampson was on my ballot and absolutely deserving of it, no doubt about it. Tough call, I maintain. This was one of the toughest National Coach of the Year races and one of the best ones that we've had, but I voted for Ed Cooley.
Okay, he was second on my list, so I respect that. Freshman of the Year, I voted for Chet Holmgren.
I did not.
I'm going to guess you probably voted for Paolo Banchero.
I did. Paolo Banchero is CBS Sports' National Freshman of the Year. So again, Kentucky's Oscar Tshiebwe, our National Player of the Year. Kelvin Sampson, our National Coach of the Year. And yes, Paolo Banchero, because of what he's been able to do in this NCAA tournament, got it over the top for me. I went Banchero, Chet, Jabari Smith. Yeah. That was my 1-2-3, and it was a three-player race for a National Freshman of the Year. But because Banchero's been so good in the tournament, Duke's made a Final Four, evaluating the season to this point.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. And again, we don't do our voting at the end of the regular season. We don't do it at the end of the conference tournaments. We wait until after the regional finals. And so Banchero, like, Tshiebwe wasn't hurt by not advancing in the tournament.
Yeah.
But Kelvin Sampson, I don't know if he wins our National Coach of the Year if we vote, you know, the day after Selection Sunday. He might. I don't know if he does. By getting Houston to an Elite Eight, pushes him over the edge. Banchero, same way. What was your ballot for your top three for Player of the Year, Coach of the Year, and Freshman of the Year in order?
Player of the Year, my ballot. Oscar Tshiebwe, Keegan Murray from Iowa. What he did down the stretch was really impressive. And then Johnny Davis from Wisconsin. I think, to me, that was a pretty clear-cut, easy decision. Davis and Murray flaming out early in the NCAA tournament gave me some pause. And I really wanted to consider Ochai Agbaji, but he was
on my list.
Yeah, and he had a great season, but the NCAA tournament, he's just been a really good player, but not a great player. Had he gone kind of supernova like he has all season, maybe I would have thrown him in there, but he just missed for me.
I went Tshiebwe, Davis, Agbaji. Keegan was just off, so on my top three, but it was close. But Tshiebwe, it's got to be Tshiebwe. He was an absolute beast. He was a monster. Finished as the first player in more than four decades, averaging better than 15.0 rebounds per game. He was at 17.4 points, 15.2 rebounds, obviously led the nation there. Also averaged 1.8 steals per game and 1.6 blocks per game. We also have our three All-America teams, so I want to give recognition to those players as well. Unless, KB, do you want to read them off?
Let's do it.
Do you want to read off our All-American teams, first, second, and third team?
I'll go first team. You go second team, and I'll read third team.
Look at this guy producing in real time.
So first team, my man Johnny Davis. Ochai Agbaji did make my first team All-American list. Drew Timmy, Sweet Feet, Keegan Murray, and Oscar Tshiebwe. That was our first team. That was my first team.
And our first team. Our second team All-Americans, Colin Gillespie, Paolo Banchero, Jaden Ivey, Chet Holmgren, and then we heard you, Illinois fans. Kofi Coburn was on our second team. I think, I don't know this for certain with the way the voting broke down, but I feel like Coburn was the first guy off the first team list. He was he had really good stats there, but it was second team Gillespie, Coburn, Banchero, Ivey, Holmgren. Third team.
So I'm going to read my third team.
You read your third team list, and I'll tell you where it differs from what we have overall.
Tell me how wrong I am. Yeah. I had Colin Gillespie on third team. I know. I'm sorry, Villanova fans. I had David Roddy, third team.
Ooh.
EJ Liddell was on my third team. Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler.
I didn't have Jabari Smith first, second, or third team. I voted Walker Kessler because I thought in total, on the whole, what Walker Kessler was, it was literally between, you know, him and Smith, and I couldn't split the difference. You went with both. Our official third team at CBS Sports, Benedict Mathurin from Arizona, E.J. Liddell from Ohio State, Jabari Smith did make it over Walker Kessler, James Akinjo from Baylor, and then, deservedly so, Armando Bacot from North Carolina. Yep. Again, tournament play can have an influence on our voting.
Yep.
He made the third team All-American. If you're watching on YouTube in the chat, there's a fella here coming to take a photo of us as we pod in real time. How are we doing, buddy?
Hey,
which did we get the most wrong? Which player that isn't on a first, second, or third team do you most disagree with? Or is there a player that was on a first team or a second team or a third team that you thought should have been on another one? I'm willing to hear your opinions and your feedback on that. But those are our overall All-American awards there. What about it, Nada? What's the big one with what about Bacot? We got people that are pushing back. Oh, first or second team. Okay. Nada's telling me in my ear that Bacot not first of all, Armando Bacot has no claim to be a first team All-American this season. It is a season-long award. He was really, really good. In fact, I'm here to hear your case about if he should have gotten ACC Player of the Year over Alondis Williams, but even that's a little bit of a tough call. Bacot was not in the conversation for first team. Second team, I'll hear it for sure. To this point, yes, but third team, I don't have too much of an issue with it. No, Jaime Jaquez, we're getting some pushback on. He was not under consideration to make my list.
He was not for me either. And it was more like do you go Johnny Juzang or Jaime Jaquez? They were both really good. Just kind of split the vote, neither. I didn't think he was head and shoulders above
little tough.
Anyone on that UCLA little tough. Team. Yeah.
By the way, I got to say, as we do this, we can loosen up on this because we're doing this on this HQ set. This is a bizarre podcasting experience for me, but I love it. We're on Fulton Street in New Orleans. You know, every 15 minutes, for some reason, cars start just honking. Don't know why, but this is kind of cool. I hope you are enjoying watching in real time, getting plenty of pushback on the Bacot stuff. He wasn't a first team All-American. I don't know what to tell you. He was really, really good. He wasn't one of the five best, most important players in the country this season. He was close.
He might be on like an all-tournament team. I mean,
without a doubt. He's been one of the five most important players in the tournament. But we start the tracking the first day of the season all the way to the end. He had to be on our All-American list. And I put him third team, but he was like, I can't remember my exact ballot. He just lost out. He might have just lost out to Chet, I think.
Yeah.
You know, between the two. I had Timmy in there as well, so that's something else to
I think that's the right call. Yeah.
All right, it's time to talk Final Four. Time to talk matchups. We had press availability on Thursday. We will have more later in the day. Heard all the coaches, all the players, Villanova, Kansas, North Carolina, Duke. Thursday is just a day to kind of, you know, wade into it gently. Today will be more expansive media availability. Players will have breakout sessions, which basically means, you know, the press will be able to go, and it's not just them sitting at a podium. You get to kind of talk to them face to face. Coaches have longer press conferences. We'll wait and see what Jay Wright, Bill Self, Mike Krzyzewski, Hubert Davis have to say. One of the interesting moments for me on Thursday was when, I don't know if you heard the clip or not, someone asked Hubert Davis how it felt, you know, this idea that North Carolina is a Cinderella. Did you see that clip? North Carolina.
Yeah, it's a tough scene. Cinderella, just the lowly underdog Tar Heels.
Carolina.
Picking themselves up by them bootstraps.
And I loved Hubert's response because he was basically like, I don't know what that means. It's a North Carolina. We've made 21 Final Fours. I understood the premise of the question. It's the idea that it's the lowest seeded team. You know, Duke's played as well as anyone in this tournament. And if there could ever be a team that's considered the longest shot to win, I guess it's Carolina. Villanova doesn't have Justin Moore. We'll wait and see on that. And we'll talk about that game in just a second here. On the Duke side, I got to say, as someone who's been at every Krzyzewski press conference over the past 5 weeks, he seemed like low key in a weird way. And, he's at every other press conference I've been to this point, Krzyzewski has been, you know, he's been giving off a certain enthusiasm. He has also really been kind of soaking in this final tour of everything. Yesterday, you know, I don't know if it was just, you know, because they had just worked out or about to, but he was giving off just a chiller vibe. I'll be interested to see what he and the players, how they present themselves later today. No one's talking about this Duke-North Carolina game. So we're going to do that right here on the pod. You know,
This is the first time Duke and North Carolina have ever played each other in the NCAA tournament. 257 times they've met.
All right, I'm going to ask a question to the live chat right now. It's the listeners. If you're listening, you know, on your daily run, jog, ride to the store, you can find us and give feedback. I am curious, from the fan perspective, are you appreciating, are you liking, because we're really like we're on the day before these games are going to get played. And, you know, we've talked, we podcasted on it. I have a huge deep dive on Mike Krzyzewski, that published on Thursday, and basically his maniacal work ethic and the process, like after for 45 plus years, after every game, Mike Krzyzewski goes and watches the tape with his staff for 2, 3, sometimes 6 hours. They've, you know, I was able to talk to Steve Wojciechowski, Chris Collins, Mike Bray, Jay Billis, and I talked to John Shire about all this as well. I do encourage you to go read it, because I do. I tried to write something that was fresh, different, not easy when you're talking Mike Krzyzewski and everything's been written about this guy. But I hope I tapped into something that will give you a bit more insight, because frankly, like, it's ridiculous how great his work ethic has been and how it just hasn't changed. It's a long buildup. I am curious if all of this Duke Carolina talk, if it's too much for you, or if you're just loving it. You're ensconcing yourself like it's velvet in this. Are you appreciating this? Because we are trying to give good due to Villanova and Kansas as well. But I mean, to me, it almost feels like we can't talk about Duke Carolina enough, because these are, again, as I said on the Wednesday show, KB, these are the glory days. The fact that we are able to live in this moment right here, right now, and get this game. And again, it's the very fact that it's not just that it's them in the tournament for the first time together. It's they're doing this, and like Kay's about to get off the escalator, and Hubert just hopped on.
Yeah,
and they're passing like this, and this is the spot they're doing it. It's pretty cool. I'm going to give you the floor. Talk to me. Any angle, what you love about this game, this matchup, all of it. Let's hear it, KB. Let the people know.
Yeah, what's that meme? There's like a girl, and she's like, why am I crying in the club now? Like, that's how I feel about like being in New Orleans for this. This is really special to be here to watch Coach K's maybe last game tomorrow, or maybe last game on Monday, to see kind of the end of an era of Duke basketball is pretty cool. I mean, as far as the Duke North Carolina game, I'm really interested, and I think probably a lot of other draft Knicks are interested too, is how does AJ Griffin look in this game? Because he was the difference maker when they first played in round one, had 27 points, and Duke blew the doors off of North Carolina. The second game, 5 points, Leaky Black was all over him, and North Carolina blew the doors off of Duke. It's weird to think about AJ Griffin, a former five-star recruit, as an X factor. But this Duke team is so stacked between Paolo Banchero, Mark Williams, Jeremy Roach, Wendell Moore. It feels like he's going to end up being the difference maker in this game. I know you mentioned this earlier in the week, but they've had so much good balance from the top of their roster that, you know, it almost feels like they're Thanosing everyone. It's just like they're inevitable. And I'm curious to see if they can keep this going, because obviously North Carolina had their number the last time they met. How do they stack up against each other this time?
Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I want to provide for our viewers on YouTube, if you have not already hit the like button, please do. I'm literally going to do it right now. I just did it. If I can do it, you can do it too. When GP and I do this, we don't often get into the actual, you know, breaking down the game, assessing what's happening. Again, there's a man just off camera. He might be taking a video. What's up, dude? How we doing? There we go. Nice. It's casual. It's casual. We're doing a casual podcast out here. Side note, I had to do a hit. I'd been doing hits with Avery Johnson on this set. Man of the people from this area. They love Avery Johnson-Harris.
Love.
I was doing hits yesterday trying to talk through Justin Moore not playing for Villanova, and I got people over here just yelling for Avery. We're on set. We're live. And they're just yelling. They want a picture with him. Incredible. It's going to get even more incredible later on today as more people filter through. We're starting to see more and more fans. Last night you got a little of it, you know, went around. It was more, you know, coaches, went to a few parties, just saw more people in the industry. Friday will be the day where the fans really take over New Orleans. Point I'm making is that we'll do a little game breakdown here for you. You know, now that we're a day out, we'll give our assessments of how we think this game should play out, will play out with both of these. So I'll pivot. We'll go Kansas Nova first, and then we'll give our predictions and our expectations for Duke and North Carolina. No Justin Moore. I've talked to, I don't know, six or seven coaches at this point that have played Villanova, familiar with Villanova, and they've echoed the point that I made, and I think I made this on the Wednesday show. If there is one coach and there's one program that can overcome losing a player of Moore's value, I do think it's Villanova.
Yeah.
That being said, let me read this to you, KB, in terms of what Villanova will actually have at its disposal in terms of depth. They'll get their so they'll play Gillespie, Samuels, Dixon, Slater, and then Caleb Daniels will now become a starter, right?
Yep.
After that, you're looking at probably Chris Archidiakono and Brian Antoine. Archidiakono has played in 21.8% of the minutes this season, according to KenPom. Brian Antoine, just 12.3%. Now, Jay Wright specifically mentioned both of those players. I watched his appearance on PTI earlier in the week, and those are the two guys he mentioned. So I'm going to take him at his word. But do you think we might have like a little bit of an Iron Five deal? Like Carolina's got its Iron Five. Yeah. You know, Hubert hasn't gone to the bench much. I kind of feel that might be the case, but the element of this game that I'm most intrigued on is Villanova is one of the slowest teams in the country, 345th in adjusted tempo at KenPom. Kansas, and Wright spoke to this on Thursday, Kansas will absolutely try and, you know, get this game upward of 68, 69, 70 possessions. Here's the breakdown on it in the tournament so far. Kansas has played 75, 70, 69, 72 possessions. Villanova has played 61, 59, 62. There's that damn horn. You got to be kidding me with this. I told you. I warned you. Apologize. Nova, 61, 59, 62, and 58 possessions. Your expectations for how this game is played, does Villanova win the tempo battle, and how does Jay Wright handle not having all that deep of a bench going up against Kansas?
I think Kansas will be able to dictate pace. This is going to be a track meet, and Villanova is not going to be happy with that, obviously. Jay Wright talked a little bit about this on Thursday, saying, you know, he wants to try and post up some of his guards. They're going to try and play slow. They are one of the slowest teams in all of college basketball. Losing Justin Moore, their minutes leader on the season, I do think that Villanova is fully aware that one of their best players is down. Now, Caleb Daniels is going to step in, and I think he's going to have a really good game in this one, but Villanova already has a pretty short rotation as it is. You're losing Justin Moore and inserting Caleb Daniels. Now you're going to have to rely on Archidiakono and Brian Antoine off the bench. Those are really good players, but they're not exactly guys that I don't think they're going to be relying on for 20, 25 minutes. So Kansas is really good when they're running in transition. Christian Brown is a really good transition player. If Villanova is able to slow this game, then I think it's going to be, I kind of think it'll be a Remy Martin game where he's going to be relied on.
Do we think over on, okay, how about this? And I want your feedback in the chat for everyone watching. If I go over under 11.5 points for Remy Martin in this game, what are you saying?
Over. I'm taking the over. He's been really good. Now he had, you know, a single digit scoring performance against Miami, but he scored 23 earlier this tournament. He scored 20 in another game. I feel like he has been consistently their most productive player.
We just got our 69th like. Continue.
Nice. And when plays break down, Ochai Agbaji can attack the basket. Christian Brown can attack the basket, but no one, I don't think, can quite create their own shot like Remy Martin can for Kansas. And if this thing turns into a slog and Villanova is able to kind of yuck up the game, Remy's going to be huge. I think he's going to be really, really important to what they do. Regardless, I do think he'll end up having a big game just because he's had a great NCAA tournament run so far. Sure. Take the over or under?
I hate this over under.
Hammer it.
Over.
Hammer it.
Hammer it.
KB's saying hammer it. Hammer the over if you're into that kind of thing. Smash the over.
Smash like your brand of days.
True or false, the most valuable player to any single team in this Final Four is Colin Gillespie. Any of the four.
False.
Why is it false? Who's the most valuable?
He's been good, but he's
like
you're talking about combination of leadership, experience.
Just, no, who's the most valuable player? Who's the most valuable player to their team of the four that are here? Is it? I'm just, you know, since we're talking this game, I'm just wondering if you think it's Colin Gillespie or if it's someone else.
Paolo Banchero from Duke.
You think Paolo Banchero on a team filled with NBA draft picks is more valuable than Colin Gillespie running the point for Villanova?
Absolutely.
All right, tell the people why.
Undoubtedly. I mean, what he's doing for Duke is pretty special. I think we'll be looking back in this a few years as like the Carmelo Anthony run for Syracuse. Like, he's averaging 18.5 points per game, 7 rebounds. His ability to grab and go in transition is really opening up Duke's offense. And when he's charging to the rim and attacking and not settling for deep shots, it opens up a lot of things for this Duke team. This offense right now, number one in KenPom in adjusted offensive efficiency, by the way. Paolo Banchero grew up as a guard, right? So he's already got like the guard skill, the guard mentality. Hit a few growth spurts. Now he's 6'10", 250. But when he is able to grab the ball and attack the rim, he's not just a guy who's going to shoot it. Like, his ability to pass out of those positions, I think, has really elevated Duke's offense to a new level. I think he's their best passer. He's not a point guard, but he's acting like kind of a point forward. His importance, I think, to Duke can't be understated. It feels like he is always coming up with clutch shots when Duke needs it, and they haven't really needed it because they're kind of rolling right now.
All right, we'll talk more on Duke and Carolina in just a minute, but we'll circle back here with Villanova, Kansas. Because it's just incredible that this is the undercard. Villanova, Kansas, man. It's awesome. That's as good of a first game in a national semifinal as you could ask for, you know, considering that, you know, how big of a headliner Duke Carolina is. I think Gillespie is the most valuable player because he runs the point, because he's a veteran guy. I shared this anecdote on CBS Sports HQ earlier on Friday. I was talking to Jay Wright after the Providence win earlier in the season when Villanova won at Providence, really, really good game. And he shared an anecdote about how, you know, Villanova has this lineage of guards, obviously, from Ryan Arcidiacono, you know, Jalen Brunson. And yeah, it goes even beyond that. But the point is, you know, for years and years now, there's been this succession of players where, you know, the next point guard or the backup point guard comes in and they learn and they, frankly, they get their ass kicked in preseason practice. And so Gillespie was, you know, a CAA level kind of recruit, if that. It's wild. And no one that was a highly rated point guard was going to go to Villanova when Brunson was there because they didn't want to play behind him, because at that point he was going to play in one more season. I think that's the way that Jay Wright laid out the timeline for me. And so that's why Gillespie was able to go there. He just, you know, he didn't care. And they actually planned to redshirt him for his first season. And so they, you know, they get into summer workouts and they get into preseason practice. And the plan is to redshirt this new guy that nobody knows. His name is Colin Gillespie. And he's getting just, you know, beat up and toasted and roasted in practice. And the whole time, like, the Colin Gillespie you see now and have seen in recent years, that's who he was at 18 years old. And so behind the scenes, like, Jay Wright, seeing how he's responding, he's never wilting. He's getting beat in practice and he's going through it, but he's responding well. There's never a complaint. There's never a, you know, coach, why this, why that. There's none of that, KB, none of it. And so Jay went to his staff and was like, we can't redshirt him.
Yeah.
He's better significantly than we thought he would be. And so, you know, that kind of sets up his whole college career here. He has an MCL tear last year. He's not in the tournament. He comes back and he just is as steady flat line of a player as we have in this tournament, as we might have in the sport. It's truly wild to me how Gillespie has just no pulse whatsoever. And because he plays the point guard position and he's a clear leader, and now they need him even more because Justin Moore isn't available. I think his play, he needs to have a good game. If you tell me, listen, guys, I promise you that when we get to the end of Villanova, Kansas, I'm not going to give you the score, but I'm going to say Gillespie is in single digits, shoots worse than 45%, has five turnovers. I'm going to tell you Villanova has like a 5% chance at best of winning that game. I think he has to play well. It is imperative. Now, it's not just him, but he will need to play well. Gillespie on the season shooting 41% from three. Villanova is not a top-tier three-point shooting team. It ranks 61st in the nation, making 35.7% of its three-point shots. The other good three-point shooter is Caleb Daniels, who's a 38% three-point shooter. He'll need to play well. And then I think Brandon Slater is the guy. If Villanova can win or keep it close, I think that Slater is the guy in this game that's most likely to be the guy we're talking about if Nova wins, just in terms of doing all of the little things. And they will need the other element to keep an eye on this, and I'll get to Kansas in just a second, for the Villanova side is they will need someone to step up significantly from a statistical standpoint. Will it be, you know, Dixon's going against McCormick. He's been a really good player. The Dixon-McCormick matchup to me is one of the biggest mysteries in this game overall, but I think it's going to be Slater. Like if Villanova can win the game, he's the guy that maybe we look up and it's like, look at him, man, 14-8-4 or whatever. And he went a long way toward doing it.
Now call me a sucker for a storyline, but I'm all in on Caleb Daniels just having a heck of a game. New Orleans native.
Yes. And I talk real quick.
Yeah.
Just because I talk with Kellen Sampson here in New Orleans from Houston, associate head coach. I'm paraphrasing what he said, but he basically was like, man, Caleb Daniels is an absolute dude. He is a dude. We knew how good he could be, but he was so much more physical and imposed his will on the game than we anticipated. And this is Houston we're talking about here. So to your point, you know, coaches would agree. Continue. Yep.
No, I mean, Caleb Daniels is going to be put in the starting lineup for the third time all season, most likely, on Saturday night. He's a New Orleans native, probably going to be starting in place of Justin Moore. Jay Wright on Thursday talked about like how crazy it is that Caleb Daniels is even in this position. So he got COVID once, then he got COVID again, and then he got myocarditis, which is an effect that some people get when they get infected with COVID.
Right.
Jay Wright said he did not do anything, not even shoot free throws from April through September. And to be where he's at now, playing so far as one of the most important players on a Final Four team. And now he's going to be a starter. He's coming back to his hometown in New Orleans, where he played just down the road to start his college career. I'm a sucker for a storyline, but I really feel like he could be in for a big game.
All right, Kansas side on this. Break it down for us. How should Bill Self approach this game? You know, it's my belief that we've got really, really good coaches here, but from a tactical standpoint, from an X and O, from an in-game adjustment, your slobs, your blobs, all the design. I think Bill Self is the best. That's who you ask coaches in the industry. You say, listen, it's a blanket five guys against a blanket other five guys. You get the four coaches that are here, and you get 30 minutes of prep time. Who you take? And I think Bill Self narrowly wins that. So with that in mind, expectations on Kansas side, who's going to play well, and how do you think the Jayhawks should approach this game?
Yeah, I'm curious to see what Bill Self does with David McCormick. I think that's kind of the unknown and the X factor in this game. Kansas has played very, very well when they're playing small ball lineups, but
can you hear that thing right now? You've got to be kidding me. Keep it going, KB. They might not be able to hear it off mic, but I'm just curious if you can hear it.
It's brutal.
Obviously not. Who knows why it's happening?
The small ball lineup for Kansas has paid off in a big way for Bill Self. Villanova mostly has to play small ball, right? I mean, their biggest Jermaine Samuels, who's 6'7", has been basically their big man defender. He's been guarding like Hunter Dickinson, 7-footer. I'm curious if Self is tempted to say, hey, let's see what David McCormick does out there, and it doesn't end up working out. But he knows he has the size advantage and stubbornly keeps playing him, because I think Kansas' small ball lineup is kind of their death lineup. Like, that is really, really good with Jalen Wilson, Christian Brown, Ochai Agbaji. So that's, that to me, I think is curious. I'm curious to see what Kansas does there and how they allot their minutes and what David McCormick's role will be. I'm pretty confident in thinking that Kansas is going to want to play as fast as possible, knowing that Villanova likes to play slow, knowing that Villanova right now is basically entering this game on like a 5.5-man rotation, especially with Justin Moore gone. I think keeping that in mind, that's most likely how I think Kansas will end up trying to attack this game. Even Jay Wright said on Thursday, Kansas will probably be the fastest and quickest team they've played against. And I think Villanova is kind of expecting that they will try to meet on KU's terms.
I don't know if it's necessary for Kansas to win, but for one player for me specifically, I almost feel like kind of got to get a good Jalen Wilson game here.
Yeah. He's been really good.
I feel like that might, you know, Remy, I think, I don't know if Remy's play is dependent. Like, Ochai needs to have a good game, you'd have to think. Mm-hmm. And I think that Kansas going small would not be beneficial to them. Yeah. Now, they're going to want to run, and I think they'll try, but I think Villanova will also be. Like, mark me down for 65 possessions in this game. I think Villanova slightly wins that battle. But Jalen Wilson coming up big in this spot, he might be the guy that we're talking about more than any other one. Maybe, I don't know, maybe not. He can be a little bit like this, a little up and down there. But
how about Jay Wright on Thursday comparing Jalen Wilson to Josh Hart, Villanova legend Josh Hart, a bigger Josh Hart?
That's a big time comparison.
Yeah, and Wilson's been huge. I mean, he's their most important rebounder at his size. Like, he's a very talented, like, that is a skill set that is absolutely paid off for Kansas.
Let's pick this game, KB. I'm checking right now. I'm checking the CBS Sports app, which you should have on your phone and all your devices if you don't already. It's how you read stories. Watch HQ. You can't watch the podcast on the app. We got to work on that. But that's why you watch it on YouTube. Hey, YouTube. How about this real quick? I'm not going to name names, but we were at one of these Final Four. And I'm not naming names.
Name them.
I am going to name one name, actually.
Name them.
I'm going to name them because there's a head coach who loves the podcast and loves Gary Parrish. Shouts to Mike Martin at Brown. Huge, huge podcast guy. He's not the only one, but he loves it. Like, he texts me, is like, I can't get enough Gary Parrish in my life. I don't know what it is about this guy, but I love him. So yeah, I'm calling out Mike Martin right now. Now, there were other coaches I saw last night that they love Parrish doing the Hey YouTube thing. I'm not with GP. All right, so I last night we're just going around, we're seeing some fellas. You were with me at this point, but you weren't next to me. This is a coach in his late 50s or 60s, and like the first thing he says to me is, "Hey YouTube," and I'm like, "You got to be kidding me! This is my life right now. This is my life. This is." And then I've got another coach in his late 50s going, smashing it like Brandon Davies. I'm like, this is unbelievable. What's happening here? I'm actually having this conversation with you about this. Incredible. GP, you are missed. I assume you're alive. Again, he's got CBS Sports Network stuff the entire day. There's the open practices. There's the Reese's All-Star Game. He's going to be on CBS Sports Network throughout the day. He is here for you post-game. Don't worry. And we got plenty more. GP and I will be on the podcast together plenty throughout the rest of the weekend there. Okay, so I wanted to pick the game. I want to see the lines on the CBS Sports app here. But that really was a surreal moment when I got these are head coaches, accomplished men, not naming names. Hey, YouTube. Goodness gracious. It's just incredible. Let's see here. Scores wise. Bring it up. I could have prepped for this, but you know what? The Laval thing twisted me.
I believe it's KU minus four.
I guess. No, it's not. We have a moment. All right. So right now, KU minus 4.5.
Okay.
Pick a winner and pick against the spread, KB.
KU. I think this game has the most likely chance to be a complete blowout. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I do think at some point Villanova's depth or lack thereof is going to hurt. I know you're looking at me like Colin Gillespie the GOAT, And I get it.
I didn't say the GOAT.
I get it. I get it. It's Villanova. It's Jay Wright. But Kansas is deeper. I think they're more talented. Coaching, probably a draw. Maybe Bill Self.
Give me a final score.
Kansas wins 77-70.
77?
77-70.
I'm looking. Hold on. Let me see here. The last time. So the last time a team got 77 on Villanova this season. Hold on. I'm checking.
This is after Villanova's last two opponents were both held around.
There
50.
Hasn't been a team got. I'm looking right now.
Yeah.
Connecticut got 71 on them. Marquette got 83 on them on February 2nd. That's the last time a team got as many as 77 in a game against Kansas. I will take Kansas to win. I will take Villanova to cover. I think Villanova winning this game is a very distinct possibility.
Oh, absolutely.
It's 100% on the table there. Again, they met in 2018, different roster situations, all that. Give me Kansas. I will go Kansas 69, Villanova 67. Nice. Kansas 69, Villanova 67. Jayhawks move on to play in the national championship game. Let's talk Duke Carolina since everyone else refuses to do that.
Yeah.
Carolina, Iron Five. It's had four players. Baycott, RJ Davis, Caleb Love, Brady Manick. They've all had a game where they've led UNC in scoring in this NCAA tournament. Also, those four guys, when these teams last played at Cameron Indoor, they all had 20 or more points. It was the first time in the history of UNC's program that four players had 20 or more in a game. They'll need to come up big, obviously, in this spot. I can't wait to see what these players say when they're asked again about this game and try and shrug it off. High hilarity trying to downplay that this is just another game. High hilarity. Expectation. Let's start with Carolina. UNC side. How is Hubert Davis going to approach this game? Who's going to step up? And if Carolina is to win, how are they going to do it?
Yeah, I think this is going to have to be where RJ Davis and Caleb Love are just awesome together. Armando Baycott had an amazing game against the Peacocks of St. Peter's, 20 points, 22 rebounds. But I think to win in this game, Caleb Love is going to have to be like supernova Caleb Love. And he's showed he can do that in the NCAA tournament. It doesn't happen very often. You kind of live and die with Caleb Love sometimes. But I think if he drops 20 points and does it decently efficient, UNC is going to have a chance. RJ Davis, I trust, will have a good game distributing the ball, shooting the ball. X factor, I think, is going to be Brady Manick, who has been the X factor the entire NCAA tournament. The trail threes, pick and pop. Hubert Davis is going to put him in a situation where he is going to have a chance to keep shooting and keep UNC in this game. I think this will be a really close game.
You do.
I don't want to pick North Carolina. I can't do it.
Well, hold on. We'll get there.
Okay. All right.
You like Carolina Duke to be a better chance at being a close game than Kansas Nova.
I do.
Okay. I anticipate of the four, and we're going to shout to Leaky Black, of course. We've had some requests for GP and I to actually get a photo with Leaky Black. Listen. If I can make this happen today, I absolutely will. It's a matter. I gotta be in the same spot as Parrish, and we gotta be in the same spot as Leaky Black at the same time, because it's not gonna happen tomorrow. The Carolina would need to win, and then maybe on Sunday we can make it happen. But if Carolina loses, it's gotta happen today here. So we'll see on that. I don't know. Yes, I would like to have a photo of me, GP, and Leaky Black together, 100%. We'll see if we can get it done. I'm just telling the audience right now. I will earnestly try and accomplish that. But it might not be the easiest thing. These players have, there's tight schedules. We got to get them during the open practice. If it's going to happen, that's where it's going to happen. Leaky Black's perimeter defense is going to be huge in this game, unquestionably. I wonder who he's going to get assigned to and if that assignment gets changed up, because the three best defenders in this game, Mark Williams, ACC Defensive Player of the Year, then Leaky, then Wendell Moore Jr. Those are your top three defenders, in my opinion, in this matchup overall. On Carolina's side of things, I'll be interested to see if they can have a collective the way they did at Duke, or if you might have Brady Manick being the guy that steps up big in the spot. RJ Davis is unafraid. Dude just simply does not care. And I say that in a complimentary way. He will attack and attack and attack. He's got an unending confidence to him that I think is going to be necessary in a game like this. And then Armando Baycott, he's just been an absolute beast. I think I think Bacot's going to be – maybe he gets a lot of his production off the boards. I feel like he's – even more than Love, he's the biggest target for Duke from a defensive standpoint.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's most likely that he has the best game for Carolina. I'll go with Manek because I think his shooting's going to be huge. They need it, no doubt about it. Love was out of his mind in the regional semis against UCLA. Asking him to duplicate that will be tough.
Yeah.
All right, Duke. Real quick on the Duke side of things, Bancaro going to be the best player on the floor for the Blue Devils here, because again, Duke has had all of its dudes play well every single game. Essentially, yep. There hasn't been a guy who's had a bad 2-game stretch in the entire tournament. There, what is Coach K and staff going to do here?
Bancaro is going to be the most productive player. Mark Williams will be the most important player. Keeping Bacot off the boards, limiting UNC's chances to create second chance opportunities, which Bacot absolutely thrives on. He is always in someone's back, creating a chance to get offensive rebounds. Mark Williams will be vital to limit those opportunities. And then affecting shots around the rim, like he's done the entire NCAA tournament. Whether that's blocking shots, whether that's affecting shots, just generally clogging the lane for North Carolina to not be able to get easy looks at the rim. I think maybe he doesn't have the biggest stat line, but his presence in this NCAA tournament has been fabulous. I think he'll be the most important player for Duke, and I think he's the reason Duke advances to the title game.
He made the pick there. My quick thoughts on Duke here. I think Williams' presence is going to be massive in this game. Undeniably, he's been really, really good shooting up draft boards. This is really an opportunity. If Duke wins, like, Williams could turn himself into like a bona fide, like, you know, near lock top 10 pick. Keep an eye on that. Bancaro, I inherently trust Bancaro in a situation like this. He has continued to get better and better and better and better. I do wonder if this is the spot for AJ Griffin, and I wonder if we see Leaky Black assigned to him overall. And, you know, is this a spot where, like, you know, the Final Four, sup to Brent Stover. Hey, Stover, have you seen Parrish? Where's Parrish? He's up there? He's up there right now. Gary Parrish is up there. Are you kidding me? We are podcasting live right now, and he's been in that building the whole time? He's just eating? Just been eating for an hour straight. Yeah, it is live. Oh, we are absolutely live. Should you get Parrish?
Yes, go get Parrish.
No, we got to get off in like sooner. 5 minutes. But this, my man's been right there the whole time. Wow, that's a dagger.
Unreal.
Anyway, we're going to wrap here in a second. I just can't believe he's right there.
Unreal.
He's right there. It's unbelievable. Trevor Keel's in this spot. That's what I was going to say. Sometimes you get these final four stages where you do have – I love when you get a player that's, you know, a good player, but you just don't see, like, that's the player that winds up being the MVP. Like, what if it's a Keel's game? I don't know. I'm intrigued on that. And my last thought in this game before we make the picks, you made your pick, I'll make mine. I do think that these teams, having gone through what they went through with all of the media hype of the last game in Cameron, Duke having this, you know, revenge factor to it, Carolina having the confidence of we absolutely punked you in your house, but Duke can say, well, yeah, we did the same thing too.
Yeah.
There's so much around this that I do think that there are so many, it makes the game fairly unpredictable in terms of how it actually plays out.
Yeah.
I love that there's that backdrop and element to it. And to be clear, if Carolina beats Duke, it is forever has the upper hand in the rivalry. Forever. Until the sun swallows this planet. If Carolina gives Coach K the L, last game of the regular season, which happens, and then it ends his career in the Final Four, it's done. UNC's got it over Duke in perpetuity. Duke can win 5 straight national championships in John Shire's first 5 years. Carolina has that over them forever.
We might wake up Tuesday morning with 49 states in the U.S.
It's just wild. The line right now is Duke -4.
Okay. Yeah.
I will take Duke to win. I'll take Duke to cover. We got to get scores here. I'll get mine. You can give yours. I will say there's a good chance this is an really entertaining game. Up and down, good tempo, good scoring, good shooting. Give me Duke 85, UNC 77.
Ooh.
Good game. Maybe just a little bit out of reach. Duke wins, it covers. I'm all too willing and able to be wrong. Carolina can win this. I want to be clear about this. UNC can win this game. That'll be quite the scene if it happens. What's your final score guess?
Yeah, I'm going to go Duke 72, North Carolina 69. I don't think this will end up being the track meet that maybe we expect.
So you have Carolina covering.
I do have Carolina covering, though. And if North Carolina wins, it would not surprise me.
Okay, well, there you have it. Hello from Fulton Street in New Orleans to everyone that's been watching on YouTube. Thank you. If you watch after the fact, please make sure you hit the like button. Nada is an absolute superstar. He's been producing remotely on site here. We have many more podcasts coming for you. We'll have a post-game Final Four live breakdown on YouTube Saturday night, deep into Saturday night. Parrish and I will then podcast. We're either going to GP and I will be here on set Sunday, or we will do it from our hotel rooms. It very much depends on schedules and press conferences. There's a lot of moving pieces. But you will have a Saturday night, a Sunday, and then a late into the evening national championship recap one. So we got three more shows coming to you from New Orleans. Hope you all enjoyed it. This was a little bit of a different vibe here. Shouts to Shelvin Mack. He literally just walked out. I'm waiting for Gary Parrish to walk out this door right now.
I think he's going
to
be on set.
We have to get off in like 60 seconds. I see not in this. I want my man to walk out this door right now, so I can curse him in public here.
Can we hit a hey YouTube just for GP? I know he's watching.
Hey,
right?
YouTube! Hey, YouTube! It's GP's thing, though. I kind of feel bad. I don't do the shots. Man, I can't. It's off camera, so you can't see it, but a stream of people keep walking out. If Parrish has to be on the air at 11, he should be walking out any minute there. I want him to crash the set.
We got to wrap.
They say we got to go. Hey, thank you for listening. Talk to you soon. Download, subscribe, rate 5 stars, the whole deal. Enjoy the national semifinals, everyone.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.